a robbery that turned into a homicide, that turned into a prison break, that turned into the reign of a serial killer. With one thing certain, New Brunswick will never forget the monster of Miramichi. Welcome to the third episode of Canadian Killers. This podcast will go over the crimes, investigation, and trial of known Canadian serial killers. Before we get started, I must mention this podcast will contain the topics of substance abuse, violence, sexual assault, and use explicit language. It is not suitable for younger audiences. June 21st, 1986. John and Mary Glendenning were an elderly couple who owned a convenience store in Black River Bridge, New Brunswick. One night, the power got cut out randomly, and three men came bursting through the front entrance. They demanded to know where the Glendenning safe was. During this robbery, Mr. Glendenning was beaten to death, and Mrs. Glendenning was raped, beaten, and left unconscious. When Mrs. Glendenning awoke, she pulled herself together just enough to crawl over to the phone and call 911. Emergency crews quickly arrived at the scene. Mrs. Glendenning was lucky to survive this brutal robbery. She was able to describe the attack and her attackers. Three men by the name of Todd Market, Scott Curtis, but most important, Alan Legere, were found. When the people in the town found out that Legere was involved in the Glendenning robbery, nobody was surprised. Legere was known to be a weird and violent guy. His life started on an off note. He was born Friday the 13th in 1949. He was raised in a low-income home by a single mother and was known to have anger issues. His personality was just offsetting. I read one report that said Legere would do this thing that he called a creepy crawl, where he would break into the house of people he knew and stand at the foot of their bed and wait for them to awake, just to prove that he could. Anyways, at the trial, Legere was convicted of the murder of Mr. Glendenning. He was sentenced to life in a maximum security prison. Everyone thought his terror had ended, but that couldn't be further from the truth. Apparently, when Legere first arrived at the prison, he was chaotic. He would constantly act out, and his cell was always messy, until one day, it all suddenly stopped. Not only did it just stop, he became a model inmate, but little did anyone know, he had an agenda. Now, I've read some reports saying Legere would poke a piece of metal in his ear, and others saying he would pour urine in his ear. But either way, Legere gave himself a severe ear infection. And on May 3rd, 1989, Legere was transported to a hospital in Moncton, New Brunswick. Once at the hospital, Legere asked if he could use the bathroom. In a severe lapse of judgment, he was allowed to go unsupervised. He had concealed a TV antenna in his rectum and was able to pick the locks on his handcuffs. He then busted out the bathroom, wielding the TV antenna, and many people mistook it as a knife. He was able to escape to the parking lot of the hospital, where he abducted a woman, forced her into her car, and drove him off away from the hospital. Legere was able to escape the police, and the woman was later released unharmed. The events at the hospital left everyone in shock. But most people assumed a fugitive running from the law would flee the area and saw nothing to panic about. But boy, were they wrong. For a few weeks after Legere escaped, things were decently quiet. Until May 29th, when the fire department was called to the Flams grocery store. Annie Flams was a 75-year-old woman who owned that grocery store. The store had an apartment above it, and Annie and her sister Nina lived there. The sisters had locked up the store as usual and retired to their respective rooms for the night. Legere then entered. Some reports I read said he demanded money, and others said he was demanding access to a safe. Others say he just attacked Annie, but one thing is certain, Annie was beaten to death. Nina heard footsteps coming up the stairs, and when she got up to investigate, a man burst into her room. He tied her up, beat her, raped her, and tucked her into her sheets tightly. He then ransacked the room and set the house ablaze before making his exit. Nina was able to untie herself and make it to the bottom of her staircase, where she collapsed. Nina was severely burnt. It was noted when emergency crews arrived, they thought she was naked, but that wasn't the case. Her nightgown had just melted into her skin. Despite the extreme physical and mental trauma, Nina survived. Saying this attack was brutal would be an understatement, but still, it didn't cause mass panic in the community. Most people didn't suspect Legere, and the others who did thought this attack was just a way to make money for his escape. And they were almost proven right. The next couple months in Miramichi would be quiet, until October 13th, when sisters Donna and Linda Donny were attacked and murdered. That evening, Linda had been out with a friend. She was walking back to her home when she was attacked in her driveway, hit across the head before she could even make it in her house. Legere then broke into the home and attacked Donna. Donna clearly fought for her life, as there was blood stains moving from room to room, but she couldn't match Legere's strength. She was beaten to death. Their house was reported to be on fire. Both Donna and Linda were found inside their homes in an upstairs bedroom, with evidence they had been sexually assaulted. Now, little did Legere know, his DNA evidence was being collected. Forensic DNA evidence, at this point in time, was still fairly new. A new crime laboratory had just been built in Ottawa and opened its doors. The RCMP used this opportunity to send all of its forensic samples they collected from the crime scenes. That's when they found out the perpetrator of these crimes were undoubtedly Alan Legere. That's when the mass panic officially began to spread. It was clear that Legere was not only in town, but he was there to stay. Now the pressure was on to find Legere. The RCMP increased their efforts to find the fugitive. Legere must have been feeling the pressure too, because on November 16th, Legere committed one of his most brutal executions. It is thought that he broke into the home of Father James Smith to get away from the RCMP. There, he tortured and slaughtered the church leader. It was even said that he jumped on his chest and broke all of his ribs. Some say Father St. James had a large walk-in safe and Legere wanted the combination. Father James Smith was found when he didn't show up to his 7 p.m. service that day. Worried, members of his congregation showed up and peeked in his window. They saw blood and called 911. No fire had been set this time, meaning a large amount of evidence was still able to be collected at the scene, including large footprints and blood all over the home. Father Smith's car had been taken and was found near a motel with boots that matched the footprints. I read a single report saying Legere fled to Montreal and got bored when he didn't know what to do with himself and decided to come back to Miramichi. A week later, on the 24th of November, Legere flagged down a taxi and told him to take him to Miramichi at gunpoint. Now, it was a snowy day and the taxi slid off the road. Legere simply flagged down another car, taking the taxi driver into the car as a hostage. The car needed gas, so he got them to stop at a gas station, taking the keys with him as he filled the tank and went in the station to pay. The driver of the car and the taxi driver used this as an opportunity to escape with a spare set of keys. They drove off and called the authorities. Legere was found as he tried to hijack a truck. Realizing he was surrounded, he surrendered. Legere was returned to prison to serve out his remaining time for his previous sentence. In October 1991, Legere went on trial, charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder, and after 3 hours of deliberation, he was convicted of 4 counts of first-degree murder. This was the first case in Canadian history where the prosecution was based almost entirely on forensic DNA evidence. Also, a lot of articles and opinion pieces I read about Alan Légère referred to him as a sociopath. According to Healthline, a sociopath is a term used to describe someone who has an antisocial personality disorder. People with ASPD can't understand other people's feelings. They often break rules and make impulsive decisions without feeling guilty for the harm they cause others. I found no actual record of him being diagnosed with any personality disorder, though. Anyways, Légère was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole for at least 25 years. Légère was sent to a maximum security prison in Quebec. In 2015, he was transferred to a maximum security prison in Alberta, and in January 2021, Légère applied for parole but was denied. Légère will most likely spend the rest of his life in prison, forever ending the terror he reigned over Miramichi. The information for this podcast was brought by pages from the book Terror, Murder, and Panic in New Brunswick and Terror's End, along with news coverage of the trial of Alan Légère and court transcripts.